Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing in life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write also happens to be what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA, pnwa.org. Well, let's see, what's going on? Next, this coming weekend, I will be at Northwest Bookfest. And if you've signed up for that, I'll be teaching my Fearless Writing class on Friday morning, so be sure to stop by and check that out. And Saturday evening, I will be hosting a fabulous panel of Seattle 7 writers at the Milagro Cafe in Kirkland, Washington. The panel is going to include Garth Stein, Erica Bauermeister, Deb Colletti, Jenny Shortridge, and Kevin O'Brien, so be sure to check that out. And then next week, you can visit the Authors Roundtable at East West Books on Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock at East West Books, like I said, in Seattle. And then if you happen to be in Eugene, Oregon, the next day, Thursday, I will be speaking to the Willamette Writers at Tsunami Books there in Eugene. So be sure to stop by and check that out. As always, if you want me to speak to your writers organization, your writing class, or even work with you individually, you can check me out at williamknauer.com. And if you just need a little daily dose of inspiration for your bedside, pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, an Author's Companion, available where all fine books are sold. You know, I always try to come up with something kind of specific and maybe a little clever to introduce our writers. But for today's guest, Jasper Ford, all I can tell you is this. I interviewed Jasper, I think it was about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, when he released Shades of Gray, his wonderful science fiction-y, I'll say, dystopian novel. And all I can tell you is I liked the guy right away. He was funny. He was honest. He was deprecating. He was entertaining. And I thought, I can't wait to talk to him again. And unfortunately, he came through Seattle, and I did not have the time to sit down with him. But thank heavens I have the show, and I can reach him even when he's all the way over in Great Britain, which is where I think he is today, but he's on my show right now. Jasper, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Whoa, Jasper, you're very, very soft. Can you get closer to your phone?
Oh, sorry, can you hear me now?
I certainly can. How are you doing?
Oh, good. Okay, I'm very good, thank you. We've just dodged a storm here in the UK, but a storm to us is like a mild breeze, so it was nothing major.
Well, I'm glad you survived and you dodged it and that you were able to be on the phone with me today. As I mentioned, you had actually come through Seattle, and you were there because you had just published Song of the Quark Beast. Isn't that right? The latest in the YA effort.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was great. It was kind of a swift visit. All my tours seemed to be kind of whistle-stop tours. But I was promoting Song of the Quark Beast, which is in the second of four books. Which I'm writing about a character named Jennifer Strange. It's been a lot of fun. It was a good tour, actually.
You know, when I interviewed you for Shades of Grey, had you started this series yet when we talked about Shades of Grey?
I don't think I had, although the book, I wrote the original book, The Last Dragon Slayer, which is out in paperback now. I wrote that about 97. So I think although it was sitting on my hard drive gathering electrons, I hadn't had my arm twisted by my agent to actually write a series about it. But I was very glad that they got me to do it, because it's been actually a lot of fun, and I'm just finishing writing the third in the series now. Actually, it's actually in front of me as we're speaking right now. So,
Ooh,
so if I suddenly
exciting.
Go quiet, it means I've had a really good idea and I'm just tapping away.
Well, now this is interesting. So this is technically a YA book, not an NA book, but YA. They've got a new category, I know. So this is YA. And to you, creatively, do you differentiate in your mind whether you're writing for adults or young adults, or is it all just story?
I think yeah. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head. It's all really just story. There are subtle differences between, you know, writing for a younger audience, writing for an older audience. For me, I think that the difference is not so huge because I tend to write for children of all ages anyway. You can make the plot actually very complicated because children can totally understand very complicated plots because basically children understand adults very well, you know.
Yeah.
So how can they not understand a quite complex plot? So that's fine. The only thing I tend to do is obviously I have a younger protagonist because kids don't want to read about some older guy. And also just take out the allusion, you know, references to stuff in pop culture and things like that that actually may not have come across. So apart from that, you know, maybe you might cut down a little bit on the subplots. But essentially, you know, and not make it too long, because I think long books are a little bit daunting. You know, if you can't lift a book, then, you know, I don't think anyone's going to read it. But otherwise, there's not a huge amount of difference.
You know, you said complicated, and one of the things I thought was so interesting about our conversation, I was thinking about you actually this weekend because I was teaching a class, a workshop, and one of the students in the workshop said how she had an idea for a story, but her concern was, and I think that this is not unusual amongst certainly beginning writers, is her concern was she wasn't smart enough. She wasn't smart enough to tell the story. That was her sort of secret fear. And I remember in our conversation, you came from a family that was very high-powered academically, if I'm recalling correctly. And you were the one who was not the high-powered academic. Am I getting your family history right?
Yeah, no, you're totally right, totally right.
And so I always felt that the issue of intelligence sort of hovers around writers, even if they're writing YA, speculative or science fiction fantasy stories, because writers are, and maybe this is just me, but there's a presumption of intelligence, what we think call intelligence around writers, and that not every writer who sits down thinks of themselves has that label they've given themselves. Does that make sense to you?
I like what your student was saying. I think that's she sounds like she's got her feet on the ground. I think there's quite a few people out there who are trying to write who will actually write thinking I'm easily clever enough to do this. And I like the people when I'm giving, you know, talks and advice to people. I like the people who say, you know, I can't do this. You know, I can't do this. It's just not working. I'm trying to write it and it's just not working. And what I say in reply is, yes, it's not working yet. But you've just got to work at it. You know, these things aren't easy. You know, if somebody says to me, I've just written my first book, who do I send? You know, who's your publisher? Who's your agent? You know, the alarm bells start ringing. But if somebody says to me, I've just finished my first book, I think it's a load of rubbish. Do you think I should write another one or do you think I should, you know, send this to an agent? I say, no, write another three, you know.
Right.
So, people are worried. I think it's good to be worried about whether you've got the correct sort of smarts to write a book. Anyone can learn pretty much anything, I feel. Obviously, a very smart person will be able to write a very smart book, but that's not to say it's going to be any better. You know?
No,
because storytelling is something quite different, isn't it?
And there's something mysterious about a story anyway. I came to the conclusion for myself, now you might have reached a different conclusion, that I've told a lot of stories, but in a way I feel like I, little Bill, doesn't actually know what a story is, but I know how to invite one and sort of translate it. But I can't get my I know how to do algebra, or I'm teaching my son algebra now, so I'm relearning algebra. And I kind of understand that one way, but I do not understand a story in the same way. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do, totally. And I think that's what's so wonderful about all the creative endeavors, if you like. You know, it's like art. It's like sculpture. It's like music. It's books. There are some people who love algebra because there are rules. There are strict logical rules that you can actually put on it, and there is a right or a wrong answer, and that's very, very easy, You know, you're either right or you're wrong. It's very simple. But with a creative endeavor, you don't know whether it's right or it's wrong because it has to be judged. And sometimes, you know, great art, whether it be, you know, music, film or a novel, will be, you know, derided horribly when it first comes out. And then years later, people will say, how did we think this stuff was rubbish? It's brilliant, you know. So Madame Butterfly, for instance, you know, Puccini, was booed at its opening night. And you go,
wow,
what were they thinking of? You know, what were they thinking of? So it's a very strange, dark, nebulous, misty sort of thing that no one really can say whether it's good or it's bad or it's whatever. And I think that's probably one of the really, really exciting things about what we do when we're creative, because there's no hard and fast rules, and no one knows what's going to work. And one of the things also I add on whenever I'm giving talks is if it works, it works. And that's a really annoying statement, but it's like one of the absolutely true, hazy statements about creative endeavor. You know, someone says to me, I've got this idea, you know, it's set in an all-night laundrette manned by orcs. And will it work? And I go, I don't know, but if it works, it'll work. And they go, well, that's no help. And I said, no, but that's what creativity is all about. You don't know. Not until you try it, not until you go there, not until you get muddy, you know, and come out, you know, gasping for air at the end of it, and then look back. And if it works, you're in. If it isn't, try again.
Yes, and the fact is, if an idea comes to you, what did you say, an all-night laundrette man by orcs, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so if that idea comes to somebody, now that sounds like a wacko idea to me, but if it comes to somebody, that means that somebody sees the potential for it in a way that no one else does. And that, and just like the idea about this world of color came to you in Shades of Gray, you saw the potential in that. And so it's up to you to teach us why that's cool. It's up to you to teach us. That's the beauty of your job as artist.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's the thing about, you know, any silly ideas is that, you know, in my Shades of Grey, not the other Shades of Grey, as we call it. it was very much a question of, I had this idea and I didn't know whether it was going to work or not. And I think there's a degree, and I feel very, very strongly about bold, imaginative writing. And I like to say that if you're writing without risk, you're not really writing at all. There's a lot of stuff out there which is kind of Me Too books. You know, everything's, I think, a bit humdrum, a bit samey. To be bold with an idea, and you go, right, I've got this idea about a social hierarchy of a society, three world orders in the future, which is based on the colors that you can see. That's how the hierarchy works. Can that idea work? And, of course, when I had that idea, I thought, no, I have no idea whether that can work or not. But I sat down for 2 years and wrote this book, and eventually I teased out what I thought was an actual viable, healthy story out of this bizarre notion. And I kind of work on this theory that there's no idea too stupid that can't be made to work given the correct settings and everything else. And I just think there's a lot of writers out there who are kind of not being bold enough with what they do. And I think that reflects a lot on reader taste as well, because a lot of the big bestsellers are kind of stuff that's some very, very run-of-the-mill, you know, redone ideas. You know, the big thing about crime now is we moved it to Scandinavia. And you think, well, really? You know, is that really an imaginative leap? And you go, no, it isn't. You know, it's just, you know, it's crime thrillers just moved 800 miles or 3,500 miles for you guys. So, I'm always going on about this. No, we've got to be more bold, because if we as authors are more bold, and readers get to be more bold in what they read, then we're going to have this wonderful sort of renaissance explosion of new, fantastic, beautiful ideas. And it's not happening, you know. So I get kind of very, very excited about this. But, you know, the new renaissance in writing, because, you know, I think we read Jane Austen these days, we read Dickens, and it seems so fresh and new because I don't think we've actually gone very far.
Well, and and I think it's absolutely true that you have to risk, but I think that that's why people, but I think that that word is what keeps people from doing it, is that, you know, this job, if you even want to call it a job, you know, there's no time clock. Even for you, and you've had this lovely career, there still isn't a guarantee, as you well know, although I'm sure you'll have a pretty devoted readership, but even for you, there's no guarantee, and that's, I'm sure, why people make the safe choice. And yet, and I go to writers' conferences, and I hear the agents and editors talking about what they're looking for and blah, 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 and I think, man, I don't want to hear it, because no one was looking for a book about a boy wizard who went to a wizard academy back in when the first Harry, no one was looking for that. And no one was looking for a book about vampires in high school when the first, I can't remember the name of the series came out. So no, these are huge. Twilight, thank you. And so I think you're absolutely right that you have to be willing to take the risk to create what people want but don't know they want. You teach them why they want it. Yes? I mean, isn't that part of the job of invite the imagination creates what we want but don't know we want? We'll know it when we see it.
But whilst whilst Twilight and Harry Potter were both extremely good books of their series and were, you know, hugely successful, neither of them were real world beaters when it comes to originality. You know, these were ideas that were done before. I mean, we could move them to Scandinavia now, couldn't we? We could sort of, you know, have a sort of Scandinoir Harry Potter / Twilight. But do you see what I'm saying about, you know, this? Compare books to music and art. You know, and let's say where we were writing in the sort of 1880s. Think what music was like then. Think what art was like then. And now look at what art is like now and what music is doing now and all those wonderful things that we went through, you know, the jazz age and all these fantastic things. Yeah. And yet, for the most part, books seem to be, you know, roughly the same. And I know there are outliers, and there's fantastic stuff coming from, South America and James Joyce and everything like that.
Yeah, sure.
But we just don't seem to have moved in the same direction or in such an exciting way.
So, but you see, it's a worry. I would say this to you, Jasper, and I would say this, that has got your attention that strongly. I'm going into counselor mode now, so you'll have to bear with me. But the reason it's got your attention is because you desire to see it so much, you are looking to summon forth something that hasn't been seen before. It's really got your attention. It doesn't have other people's attention. So you might be one of our leaders. Do you think? Are you willing to take that mantle? Since you are seeing what's necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I think the greater writers of mine have taken the writing experience off on exciting new journeys. James Joyce, for instance, has gone off on a completely, you know, different tangent. Yeah. But unfortunately, you know, the sort of great reading public, you know, did not follow him. And all the time, writers are coming in and doing this exciting stuff, which is, you know, left field, right field. But for some reason, the general reading public, for whatever reason, whether it's publishers keeping the same old stuff coming out every single day, the general reading public seems to be still reading human drama, crime, and to a lesser extent, fantasy and sci-fi. And I don't know what's causing it, but there are these books. But of course, because they don't sell big time, then obviously, you know, publishers don't push them so much. But it's very interesting, you know, that I work in fantasy, and whilst fantasy is one of what we call the sort of lesser genres, perhaps within the sort of publishing world, whereas it's hugely popular on TV, you know, fantasy is vast on TV, and sci-fi as well. So it's very interesting that there are millions of people who watch sci-fi, but who don't actually want to read it.
Yeah, so I'd say, in fact, in some ways, science fiction has become almost the dominant genre in the fantasy / science fiction / comic book mentality has become almost the dominant genre in film, you know, I guess because they were trying to appeal to 18 to 25-year-old boys, but men. That seems to be overwhelmingly, when you see the big blockbusters, it's that sort of, you know.
Yeah.
So you, you said something interesting. If I may, quickly, you said something interesting about when you said Shades of Grey. You said, I have this idea about this hierarchy. People can see colors, and I had no idea if it would work. Have you ever had an idea for a book where you thought, oh, that's absolutely going to work? Or is it always started with that question of, like, I don't know if it's going to work?
Yeah, because some I have had ideas for books, but they're kind of not written down yet. But I have had ideas that I knew would work. But it's a question of how many people want to read it. Because the Shades of Grey idea, I felt, did work. I thought, this is an odd idea, but I know I can make it work.
Right.
And it did work, I think. But of all the books I've written, it's sold the least well. So from a popular point of view, it hasn't worked. But it's of the books that I've written, it's the one I'm most proud of. So it's a strange, and this is why I'm interested in this whole idea. You know, everybody wants to watch Game of Thrones, but how many people read that sort of book? And the answer is not very many.
Yeah, yeah,
but
it's a lesser thing.
Interest there.
Yeah, well, you know what's interesting though about Shades of Grey is that it didn't. You know, you said it didn't sell, or, you know, I guess factually it didn't sell as well as other books. But I always feel that as an artist, it's so important to say, okay, that one didn't sell as well, but I'm sure that you learned something in the course of writing that book about yourself and where you want to go as an artist, that there's something within you expanded as you told that story, that even though it didn't have the popular success that you had hoped it would, did you feel that something within you grew in trying to tell it?
Yeah, absolutely, and I mean this is also something which I've you know, again, sort of spoken of to people, is that I had to write 7 books before I got published, but now I'm thinking I may have to write 20 books before I do something really memorable. That I'm not there yet. I'm actually still learning. I'm still learning to be an author, and even though I've got 12 books, I'm going to have my 13th book out next year, and I'm thinking. Do you know, I don't think I'm absolutely there yet. I think maybe after another 4 or 5 books. And in fact, all I'm doing now is I'm still in my training period, but now, you know, instead of doing it for no money, I'm actually getting paid for it, you know. So,
right.
And I think it's very important for authors to always think, I'm not there yet. I'm still learning. And every book I write is a little bit closer to that memorable book that may still be read 100 years from now. I live in hope, but I'm not sure.
You know, I think that is a fantastic attitude, though. I think it's so critical that you know, Alice Hoffman, the American novelist, when I interviewed her for the first time, and she's published 27 books, something like that, and according to her, she had never been really rejected even. It was a strange circumstance how she got her first novel published. But she said to me that when she sits down to write her book, next book, the first thing she thinks is, I don't know how to write a book. That she always begins. It feels like I've never done this before because each book is different. And I think it's critical that we maintain that attitude of learning, and that, because you're never going to get there, really, are you? Are you? I mean, I don't think so. You'll be closer than other people see, than other people perhaps, but you have something you're looking for, and that thing that you're looking for is going to pull you towards what you call greatness. It's got to be that way.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, also the best time to be the happiest time, I think, that I have been as an author is when I sort of got my first book published and I was writing my second, and I kind of thought I was writing good stuff. And as time goes on, you because you get better at what you're doing, you actually can see the errors and the pitfalls and the problems with your writing. And unfortunately, you can see how bad it is much quicker than you can learn to be better. So this wonderful, memorable book that you want to write is actually receding faster in the distance than you can write towards it, if you see what I mean. It's very frustrating, but it really keeps us going, and it really keeps us on our toes. And that's why writers, you know, any writer you want to mention who's been doing it for a while, it has got like 20 books, 25 books. They go on and on and on because they're seeking that wonderful, perfect, brilliant book that is just out of their reach. It's a good thing. It really keeps us going. All artists, not just authors, all great artists will be doing this, desperately trying to go and get this wonderful thing that seems to be just out of our reach.
It's absolutely true, and I feel like, I always feel that, you know, I write an essay every day for the magazine, and sometimes I feel like it hits it pretty well, and sometimes it's not as close. But even on those times that it hits it, there's always a feeling within me of a little space of what that essay suggested as pointing me towards to the next best thing I could do. Even no matter if I really feel like I got it, even if I feel like I got it, there's yet the next thing. And I don't. I hope that never goes away, because that feels like what's pulling me onward.
Mm. Yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
All right, so I got one more question for you. And I don't think I asked this to you. When we talked before. So what I want you to do is finish a sentence for me. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And the sentence is this. If writing has taught me anything, it has taught me what?
That to do anything in this world, you just need a large tub of resolve and smear it on thick.
And smear it on thick. How did it teach
you? Yeah, resolve. Yeah, you need a large tin of resolve to get anything done in this world. To get whatever it is you're trying to do, you just got to go and get a very large tin of resolve, and I mean a metaphorical resolve. I don't mean if there's actually a product out there called resolve, a tin of this metaphor called resolve, and you just scoop it out with your hand and you rub it on very, very thick, and there's nothing you cannot do with resolve. And I think if it's taught me anything, it's taught me that. And if you want to learn to do anything else, if you want anything done, it's resolve. And resolve can take years, you know.
Yeah.
But eventually, you'll get there.
And that was what got you through those first seven books that you wrote, but you did not publish. Mm-hmm. You must have had a fair amount of resolve on your hide at that point, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Resolve and long-term plans, I suppose. I'd add two things. Yeah, long-termism, which I don't know whether it is a word, but I'm making it a word. Plan long and lots of resolve.
Well, it's absolutely true, because this is a job you really have to do alone. And if you don't have the resolve, no one can have it for you, are they?
Mm. Yeah.
No, indeed. No. Well, listen, Jasper, it has been a pleasure, as I knew it would be. Again, it's Song of the Quark Beast, yes? Available where all fine books are sold?
Yeah, Song of the Quark Beast, published by Harcourt. That's out in all bookshops right now. And at the same time, we've got the first in the series. The Song of the Quark Beast is number two. The first in the series is Last Dragon Slayer. That's just come out in paperback. So both books are available right now in bookstores.
Excellent. Okay, well, Jasper, thank you so much. It has been a real pleasure to talk to you once again.
Well, no, it was a great conversation. Thank you, Bill. It was brilliant.
Oh, you're most welcome. Resolve, everybody. You need resolve. You need resolve because you got to kind of go it alone for a while, and it's always easy to give up on things, especially when you don't have a time clock to punch or boss nagging you. You're your boss, you're your employer, you are the employee, the whole thing. And so resolve indeed. But when you learn you have it, well, you can really do anything at all. It's a cliche, but you know what? It's the truth. Sometimes things are a cliche because they're the truth. So, next week, do what you love, write what you love, love who you love.